Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. I talked to what they call old timers in 12-step. This is Las Vegas. So like there's so much, every big city, there's so much 12-step recovery. And well, the guy I was talking to, can't say his name. There has to be anonymity in that program, has been helping people for 30 years, been sober over 30 years, actually. Hasn't touched alcohol or anything else. And has just like every day, it's kind of, I don't know if you guys know about 12-step, the kind of sponsor that's like, everybody loves him. Everybody calls him. Everybody respects him in the program. He spends a lot of time sitting with people right off the street early in the program who need help. He said, Scott, I spent these years making sure that all my sponsees knew how important service work is. I'm going to spend the last few years, now that I have this disease, explaining to them that they need to be free and they need to stop trying to help everybody else all the time. Because, well, he got cancer and is convinced that it's from repression and anger repression that he never got to. So he's not doing the work. This guy isn't, because he's pretty in bad shape right now, and just wanted to reach out to me and say, he says, Scott, I'm watching you on YouTube. I'm not in a place where I'm going to do work like this because I'm so old and close to it. But he said, when I talk to my sponsees, I say, when they say, should I go sponsor some people? I say, yeah, but you better go out and enjoy yourself and do what's good for you too. That doesn't have to be drugs and alcohol. Just take care of yourself and make sure you're always honest with your sponsees. Don't try to get their love and approval. It's just a good old timer, but also a good old timer who's been around even the non-dual and now KI and is wise. But he felt and feels guilty. He doesn't feel wise right now. That's why he reached out to me. He said, I feel like what I did is I got in recovery. And I got really busy because people would look at me, and every time I would tell a story in the room, it's like all the eyes were on me and they wanted me to tell them more. And I kept telling them stories. I've been doing it for 30 years. And they were all stories about me and all the shit wrong with me. But I connected with them and I helped them through the years. I said, you know, I can relate to that. I was in the 12-step program doing the same thing for many years and then became a teacher, and you know my story. But he said, Scott, what would you say? He said, do me a favor, do a podcast to all those people out there that are still suffering, who are so eager to help other people before they put their own suffering to rest. I said, I'd be glad to do that, actually, because that's really helpful for our training program and people who want to come to it. It's perfect. And I want to say his name and say thank you, but I'll just leave the name out. Thank you for that prompt. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. Before you get free or heal, you help others. Because if you look at the science, what drives our suffering is emotional repression. We don't want to feel that. So when we get into recovery or something like that, we don't do it. Nobody guides us there. And because we're there and we have the repression, there's this need for love and approval right there with it. So it could be a 12-step program, could be spiritual community, could be anything. This is the avoidant path. This is what I talk about all the time. We get a little bit of freedom whether through early days of sobriety or just early freedom on a path. And then suddenly it becomes more appealing to help other people instead of going deeper into our own true freedom there. And this is this happens all over the place. I mean, non-dual teachers do it. The first initial shift, we turn around and we help people because we have repression. A lot of it is that. If somebody's teaching right after a shift, you can imagine that it is. Because the eagerness, why is it there? To go and do it right away. But it's everywhere. So I'll just say, look, if you can understand that the same buried emotions that drive our suffering are there when we do things to try to alleviate the suffering, and therefore there's the bypass or the avoidance, but also when we're helping other people, those same buried emotions and unmet needs are doing that too, because the unconscious drives it all. And yet here at the surface or in presence or in our life, we don't see any of that. Most of what is buried. This is frozen fear in our bodies with buried emotions and programming that says, I need love, approval, I need to stay safe. And that's governing everything. No matter what our minds say, so our minds could be talking about 12-step at like a hospital or an institution, but at the unconscious level, it's, I have to get love. That's all. Or I have to stay safe by not saying certain things. And that stay safe and get love is what governs the false self that we all have. So a lot of helpers who haven't gotten to their emotional repression have a certain persona that is not threatening, of course, might even look compassionate, empathetic, peaceful, loving. It might look that way, but they're suffering under the surface. And the facade is actually just a facade. I mean, it's not that people can't be good or loving or peaceful, but when you have anger repression, it is a facade. And that facade helps, though, the unconscious to carry out its objectives. See? So I've buried anger, but I don't show it. I need love and approval. That's what's going on at the unconscious. At the conscious level is, oh, I just arrived at the 12-step conference, and I'm about to give a talk to a group of men about trust. That's all. And then giving the talk about trust, let's say, because I have anger repression, I just won't say certain things. And then how I appear at the surface is very disarming. Like everybody kind of likes me. I'm that kind of speaker, you know, maybe a little bit charismatic even. But this is all in service of how do I stay safe, get love, my needs met. And it's the same thing with teaching. If I sit here, people don't like to hear this, but if there's repression, there's repression. I'm sitting here resting as awareness. We're pointing to that and seeing how things come and go, and I'm talking about it. But the mere fact of avoiding buried emotions ought to tell you that the buried emotions are driving that. They're driving this mechanism of pointing away from that and not knowing what that is. And that also is to get needs met. Safety. Love, approval. Safety alone, the need for safety, could make a non-dual teacher do that, because repression is fear in the body. In other words, a person doesn't have to be driven strongly to get approval. They might just not want to go deep into the body, so they keep teaching in a way that doesn't. But if you can see just how big this is, you understand why I do so many episodes about it. It's not to pick on people. It's to help the hordes of people who are walking in the doors tomorrow to recovery rooms and spiritual rooms who have no idea about this, and then they become part of it. And what's the damage? Well, it's like that gentleman who's now sick. What do you mean, what's the damage? I mean, buried emotions create our suffering. There's plenty of damage. You see, just in an individual's life, let alone if they help or misguide others, but think about someone who's on heroin for years and they finally get clean. and they've got a chance to really heal, but instead they just get busy helping other people get clean. And that goes on for many years, and they're just still suffering, and then they too get a disease. And that disease could have been at least the possibility, at least, to prevent that if it came from repression by focusing more on embodiment and a deeper healing or freedom than helping others, more than helping others. It's the same thing I did, though. There's no judgment. I did the same thing. I woke up, and then I'm helping others, and I have cancer and spinal stenosis. But when you're talking about somebody in a recovery program who was on heroin, I mean, they're playing with fire, you know, like the rest of us, because they're not getting to the buried anger that has those needs for love and approval that makes them be of such selfless service all the time. And at any point in time, because they're not dealing with that buried anger, since it's the root, they're leaving themselves open to relapse, but they also soothe that by continuously helping people. So helping people becomes its own addiction when you have buried emotions. And it can easily substitute prior addictions. And helping looks healthier, so it's socially rewarded. But the problem is that people can get really sick with a helping addiction because nobody calls it out. And that's the real problem with it. It's it looks good, it looks helpful, and so who's going to say, you better stop helping people because you're going to be, you already are probably suffering if you're focused on that too much. This is why, by the way, helpers need to have boundaries. One of the reasons is self-care. Because people in 12-step, but even early spiritual communities, the eagerness to help and just, because it's like you get your newfound freedom and you want to help other people. It's just so innocent. At the same time, that eagerness, if we could pay attention to that and see where does that come from, we often think it's like altruistic. Like, oh, I'm just helping people. What do you mean? There's no personal motives here that have to do with unmet needs from childhood. But that's because they're buried, and they're supposed to be buried, and we're supposed to not know that we're doing that so that we can continue to be false and all that and survive. But it's really killing us, and now we know it, that it's not altruism. It's like Barbara Oakley said, it's pathological altruism, because we're not just hurting ourselves by focusing on others so much. We're misguiding them if we don't get to the root of their suffering, just like we didn't get to the root of ours. But there's such eagerness in it, see? And as long as eager helpers are rewarded in our culture, mostly. I know there are different cultures, but my dad was loved. He had a hardware store. He helped everybody that walked in the door personally, if he could. And practically the whole town wanted him to run for mayor. And he would have won, I think, easily, because he just helped. No, there's a tragedy in it. It really is sad. And I think about, and you think about all the people who have an opportunity, or maybe they don't think they can be really free of that. Here's what I'm saying. Imagine that it's different going forward, that this could end for at least the people that come to KI. And here's how. See, what we do from the very beginning, we don't train you to go help people. We used to do that, though. And a deep apology for that, because what people really need to do and what they do here now is go through mentorship, and they do their own work fully. And then they become really, well, they get invited perhaps into training, but then they become really good mentors and teachers because they've done their own work. But more than that, imagine now that all of us, or those who come here, forget about helping others, that you can get to the very root of all of that from the beginning. The codependency comes from buried anger, the pathological altruism. We'll show it to you in your body. There's also research a lot on it. So there you go. You're focusing in the right place here. Instead of just turning to help others and avoid, you're learning where that comes from and to seek love and approval that way. But you're also getting to the root of your suffering there. And not just how you want to help, of course, but because if you could end your suffering, you would see helping differently. If you could really, or at least significantly reduce your suffering, you would definitely see helping and teaching differently. Or I have. I can't tell you what your experience would be, but I can't make sense of how you would do deep embodiment work and then operate the same way. So it's almost like you kind of rip yourself off or sell yourself short by not getting to buried emotions from the beginning of your path. Because there is such a thing as helping, and it can be authentic with boundaries, and it can be very helpful. But as long as I'm driven by the need for love and approval, I can't really be much help to people except, well, to give them whatever I have. But if I'm driven by the need for love and approval, well, that's what I have. Even if it's never talked about, and then they're likely to do it. It's like intergenerational trauma. We teach people to bypass and avoid because we reward people. If you write a book, for example, as a teacher, it's a good book right after the realization, we'll reward you. We'll buy the book. So you don't have to, why would you ever go deeper? We've already rubber stamped your freedom, your authority. See, that's the problem, because as long as we're driven by unmet needs, we're prone to that, to do that. Ken Wilber said, if you're going to be a teacher, you got to do your work. You have to be super clear, because if you go around and you even start to believe that stuff, and you will, if you have buried emotions on some level, believe that you're whatever, we're only human. I see it all so differently now, as you can tell. When I look at the, no offense, because I'm not trying to upset the 12-steppers. I've done that through the years. I'm not trying to do that here. I'm just saying, when I look at your community, except for a few of you, there is so much codependency. So much. And you guys don't call it out very well until you go to Al-Anon. And that's where I went after years of 12-step. If I go to any meeting, it'll be like an Al-Anon or something like it. Because it's addiction, of course, in the 12-step program. But that, when you take someone's drugs and alcohol away, there has to be a substitute. And if you take something like NA, where you're not really supposed to use anything. Not that AA allows you to smoke weed, but sometimes that happens. But even in NA, they do that. But generally, NA stands for like, well, you can use anything to be addicted. So people then, they don't use things. They try not to use anything. Well, then you have no outlet for your, not even harm reduction of any kind to deal with your trauma, which you haven't resolved by getting sober. So that repression will have to express itself, those buried emotions. But because you haven't done that work, those buried emotions can't express themselves through your authentic being. They have to express themselves as a need for love and approval and avoidance and more suffering. And you could just say that helping people becomes the next addiction. for many, not all, in the 12-step program. And I just don't think that community is really going to experience the true embodied freedom until they see that so-called selfless service isn't really the way. It might be something that happens along the way, but it's not even selfless if you have buried emotions. It's driven by the need, the very personal and selfish need for love and approval that you didn't get from mom and dad. But it's the same over here in non-duality. And I'm as guilty of it as anyone. So there's the speck in my neighbor's eye and the log in my own. Because I had a training program that invited people. I just invited them unconsciously. Come and help others. Come and help. That's what I'm doing. And yet, there I was sick, right? So there's the wounded healer. It's no different, really, than the 12-step community. Non-duality isn't. Because we're just still here avoiding the issue, mostly. Until we do something like KI or a good somatic-based teacher who has seen through all this need for love and approval and how it's really running things. But as long as it remains not talked about, let me say this about non-duality. I think one of its biggest issues is its silence. And it's a culture of silence, quite literally, like we rest in silence, but also just a culture of we don't talk about it. If it ain't non-duality, we don't talk about it. To me, it felt like, as a non-dual teacher, so for those listening who don't know about the non-dual community, just people who follow the great wisdom traditions who say that the separation isn't real, you can realize that in your direct experience in this lifetime, Buddha, such and such. Well, for me, it's a little bit like, but if you become a teacher while you have buried emotions, it's like kind of selling your soul to the devil, like Bob Dylan did to make it big, he says. But why the devil? Because if you don't go all the way with your realization, you don't even discover who and what you are. Truly, teachers are no different. It's a process of living and embodying that. That doesn't happen all at once for the vast majority of people. And so that, you know, that eager to help people as the teacher is like, you can do that and you can become a good teacher, but you have to trade your authenticity because you haven't had time to embody it. And yet you want to be a teacher. That's what I did, and so many do. And it's such a trade-off, and the price can be big. I mean, there's so many teachers who are sick. You're lucky if you're a teacher and you don't get sick from that, in my view, or involved in some sort of something like it from the unconscious stuff. And it's not for money. Nobody's doing all that for money. Nobody's helping people in 12-step for money, for sure. The real currency is love and approval and safety. And nobody's really doing it in non-duality for money. Most teachers don't make that much, really. Not compared to like the Eckhart Tolle's of the world. The real currency is, let me give teachers a break. When we recognize presence and non-duality, it is a shift in perception worth talking about. So it's not like it's all driven by love and approval. Not that. But as long as there are buried emotions, it's there, and safety. And that's why there's often not that much talk of embodiment. There's just not enough. Because, well, the body keeps the score on all this. And so it's tucked down here. Like, we're not going to talk about that body thing that contains this need to help the masses to get needs met. There's one particular teacher, really well known, and I said, do you want to inquire into that savior complex? Because I bet that it's sitting on top of something. And that teacher refused. Because again, you have to sell yourself. You have to sell your soul. And when you first start teaching, that's it. That's like what you're teaching. And what are you going to do? Like 5 years later, oops, I was wrong about all that, and I was still just burying hurt and sadness, and I had trauma, and well, yeah, if that's what happens. But when you teach, it's like, if you're not clear what you're teaching, you'll hold on to it because you get something out of it. Even if it's not ultimately true for you anymore, it's move. That's what we have to do, is move with our own realization. A teacher does. If you start it early, it's just like a sponsor. Just because someone starts to sponsor someone doesn't mean their recovery ends. Just because a teacher teaches people doesn't mean their unfolding ends. Unless you're driven by the need for love and approval, and you might not even admit the need for an unfolding then, because you get love and approval by saying, hey, no, there's no unfolding here. I'm just awake and free and the ultimate parent for you. I do think people long in this day and age, I don't know, maybe some people still long for like the far removed authority who never had any blemishes, the teacher who was perfect from the beginning. And it's nice to have those heroes, but in this day and age when we know so much about trauma, why do we just buy into that stuff anyway? That we need that, or that there are people out there like that? Because what we've learned from the trauma research and from the Western discoveries is, well, that's driving everything, the buried stuff. So when somebody appears one way for a long time, either they're free or they are repressed. And anyway, one way that, see, because life is static. I haven't been one way. I've lost 30 pounds. I look different. And I just wonder, like, what that means anyway, one way, when life is nothing but fluid movement. I guess I should say it differently. I think people want a simple, stable ground to stand on, is what I'm trying to get to. And a teacher who has a realization offers this simple, stable ground for people. And the recognition of presence is a nice, simple, stable ground to kind of just, that's it. And when psychologically people have that and feel safe and they have an authority there, you know, that simple, stable ground that like we're okay here in the moment, just be with what is very deeply psychologically to our nervous systems, something that we long for. Because we didn't have it with parents who helped us regulate. So there's this safety thing that we just don't deal with in non-duality well. We don't understand the need for it quite often. If you incorporate the need for safety into your practice and realization, it's a beautiful thing. Just like the need for love and approval. It becomes such a deeper realization when those things are not ignored. Because if they're ignored, they just continue driving us into kind of codependent stuff like we're talking about today. And I think people are just scared of it, but KI has been developed to help people with this because it's very hard to articulate it, but if you can listen, how these needs that drive us to help others and focus away from really ending our own suffering, these needs are so closely associated with the buried emotions that we don't know that we're driven by them. So as we process buried emotions, there we find them. And we can make those conscious. And they give us just so much insight as to how the holding back of those emotions is creating all of our suffering. And we're being completely false in order to get those needs met. And I couldn't see just how false until I went to the repression level. Because when you do other processes that just question thoughts and beliefs, you can still bamboozle yourself into thinking, okay, I'm free now, I'm okay. But when you're really just safe, because we're driven by the need for safety. You know, I promised myself that I end these at around 30 minutes. So I just want to leave you with something here that moved me when Dan and I changed our modality, we, from our viewpoint, here's what happened. We had what we called two-dimension inquiry out in the world. And that inquiry contained, like so many other modalities, a bypass of buried emotions. But we didn't catch it at first. And then we caught it, and we changed our training program to include and correct the bypass, which you would think that anyone who's training would be very happy about. It's like, oh, the modality that I chose found the root of suffering, and I can really end my suffering. And we thought, oh my gosh, everybody's going to be so excited. But everybody wasn't. Not everybody was excited. Because that change in our modality interrupted some human beings from getting their needs met. I mean, 3D repression inquiry interrupted my life in that regard. I've told that story many times in different ways. But when we brought it, this work, to people that were training, as I've told you guys before, I think this is a really good way of seeing codependency. They too, innocently, just like us, balked at that because we had a training program in which they were about to be certified and go out and get needs met with a modality that didn't get to those needs and those buried emotions. And that's an awkward thing. It was awkward for me to realize I had a training program and even a teaching, 7 books of it actually, in which, having buried anger, I never talked about it, I never pointed to it, and yet it was the root of suffering. Therefore, I was getting my needs met by doing all of that. And couldn't admit it because it was unconscious. You can't admit something that doesn't arise. You only live it out until you suffer enough and then become curious to discover it. That's what happened for me. But not everybody who's helping people, is what I'm saying, are curious to discover this. And so my invitation to you is, if you're like so many people, just like I've talked about today, who very innocently you want to help people, what it probably means is you've met some modality or teaching or something's happened and you've experienced some freedom. But I hope that after hearing this today, you understand that you might want to investigate where it's coming from because of the potential damage here to others and to your own health. Well, KI has been completely changed now. You can't even get into our training program to go out and do that until you come and work with us in a mentorship program so we can really see kind of what you're made of and whether you're the kind of person that we would want in the training program to help people. And so we really work hard to help people before they ever think about helping others help themselves. There's a link to come talk to me for free in the description here, just to see if it's a fit. And there's also in that link some information about my group, my KI Jumpstarter group, if you don't want to do one-on-one to learn the work that way. Thank you.